Well, Justin Trudeau is Canada's new prime minister. Trudeau is a liberal. That's not good news for us or Israel. His father was prime minister years ago, but the Canadians have chosen the liberal path in their government as of yesterday. We'll see where that goes. And you know, the liberals are on a mission. Conservatives and evangelicals sit out elections, waiting for the perfect candidate who agrees with them 100%. The result? Barack Obama. But the liberals don't sit back and wait. They vote for the liberal. In the case of Hillary Clinton, for the liberal woman. And so the key here, just as we watch Canada now go liberal, the key here is to get out and vote. Conservatives and especially evangelicals who sat out the last election, the last two elections, millions of them stayed at home because they didn't want to vote for somebody that they didn't agree with 100%. Folks, you don't agree with your mom and daddy 100%. It's unreasonable to think you're going to find a candidate that you agree with 100%. Pick the best one and go vote. Now, refugees are a natural consequence of war, points out Christopher Hill. He's a former Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia. Indeed, there has seldom been a war without civilians trying to flee from the carnage. In the case of Syria, this refugee crisis is in large part the fault of the calls for regime change. Current dictator Bashar Assad's father took control of the presidency in Syria in 1971 through brutal force. Hafez al-Assad's efforts to subdue Islamic resistance with an iron fist held for decades. But in 2003, a U.S.-led coalition overthrew Iraq's Saddam Hussein and saw Iraq's Sunni minority losing power to the majority Shia Muslims. Now, make no mistake about it, Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator. But that region of the world seems unable to function without a powerful dictator. Iraq and Iran kept each other in turmoil and prevented either party from prevailing in the Middle East. After so many years of Hussein and his Sunni government, a takeover by the Shia found them placing the same kind of oppression on the Sunnis as had been placed on the Shia by Hussein's Sunnis. Enter the Muslim Brotherhood, who tried to take advantage of the vacuum created with the fall of Saddam Hussein. Various terrorist groups marched forward to terrorize innocent people in the Middle East, with their eye on expanding terror to America. In July 2011, the U.S. and France sent ambassadors to Hama, that's the site of so much bloodshed towards Syria's government, in order to urge the loosely led opposition there that is a peaceful, or was a peaceful, Muslim Brotherhood at that time, to unite against Syria's Assad. After that, seeking to bring about regime change in Syria, any prospect of negotiation with Assad was destroyed. To be sure, the Assad regime bears most of the blame for Syria's current situation, but external demands for regime change back in 2011, which amounted to a choice between Assad and extremist Sunni terrorist organizations, were not entirely thought through. Those contemplating regime change should have noticed that Assad and his cronies provided no indication that they would heed the call and leave. As Syrian refugees in the hundreds of thousands risk everything for a chance at safety, those who advocated for regime change 4 years ago should reflect seriously on their choice. Barack Obama and his advisors should never have called for regime change unless they were serious about bringing it about. When Obama publicly called for Assad's removal and then followed with the red line that he drew in the sand regarding Assad's use of chemical weapons on his own people, and then backed away when Assad used those weapons, the die was cast. Assad had no reason to fear Obama. And Russian President Vladimir Putin got confirmation of his belief that Obama was a weak-kneed person and would not act. With that, Putin moved troops and armaments into Syria to back up Assad. And that left Obama with two options. Take action against Assad that he had threatened and risk war with Russia, China, and Iran, or retreat as he has done throughout his entire presidency. He chose to retreat again. Thus, our enemies across the world no longer fear us or respect us. Our allies of the past no longer trust us. All of this was accomplished in just 6 years of the Obama presidency. As Syrian refugees in the hundreds of thousands risk everything for a chance at safety, those who advocated for regime change need to recognize their ineptness. Instead of joining the chorus of criticism against countries like Hungary and Serbia, which are beset with internal problems and who played no part in inciting the war, they should take more responsibility for their own actions. The Washington Post wrote that while the world's attention is focused on the tens of thousands of refugees swarming across Europe, a potentially far more profound crisis is unfolding in the countries in the Middle East that have borne the brunt of the world's failure to resolve the Syrian war. Those who reach Europe represent a small percentage of the 4 million Syrians who have fled into Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, and Iraq, making Syria the greatest single source of refugees in the world and the worst humanitarian emergency in more than 4 decades. These refugees are not going to go back home anytime soon, if ever they can't. The failure is first and foremost one of diplomacy. This conflict has left at least 250,000 people dead in the heart of the Middle East and displaced more than 11 million people overall. Yet there still is no peace process, no solution, no end in sight. 63% of the 160,000 people who have washed up in Greece so far this year are Syrian. About 750,000 children are not attending school. Their parents are idling away their productive years, and teens are coming of age without hope of ever finding full-time work. And that does not bode well for the rest of the world, including the United States, as the crisis only gets worse. The long-term future of children such as these is bleak, and the risk of radicalization is real. At least one out of every 4 people now living in Lebanon is a Syrian refugee. These are breeding camps for terrorists and disease. After Turkey, which says it's already spent $6 billion taking care of refugees, the United States is the largest single donor to the Syrian humanitarian effort, with $4 billion provided so far to refugees, as well as the people displaced in Syria. That amount, which works out to $3.1 million a day in 2014, is set to be an equivalent figure this year. It's less than a third of the $10.5 million a day, $10.5 million a day we spend on U.S.-led airstrikes against Islamic militants in Syria and Iraq. And yet, 75% of our planes return to base without dropping their bombs. The United States has accepted 1,500 Syrians for resettlement since 2011, but plans to admit tens of thousands more this year. Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany made a huge mistake in announcing that Germany would accept 1 million refugees, and that opened the floodgates. And Merkel is today under siege from the German people, who see the thundering herds of refugees putting great economic pressure on them. Merkel recently met with Turkish President Recep Erdogan in hopes of securing Turkey's help in reinforcing a buffer zone in the region to try and slow the tide of refugees from Syria and Afghanistan entering Europe. The refugee crisis also seems to have influenced voting in Switzerland, where the Swiss People's Party is on course to become the largest political party after their campaign was dominated by immigration. In the U.S. elections of 2008 and 2012, the lack of foreign policy experience from Obama was downplayed by Democrats and the liberal mainstream press. But we are in an age when geography no longer shields us from the rest of the world. Decisions made on foreign policy have led to the current refugee and illegal immigration problem we are now experiencing. When Mitt Romney tried to tell us that in 2012 he had the ideas and the promise of what was to happen, the Democrats and the media, as well as Obama, tried to make Romney into a fool. But Romney told the truth, and we're now seeing that truth come back to haunt us. Charles Krauthammer said that the U.S. cannot treat the thousands of illegal immigrants flooding across our border as refugees, because that would only be importing the problems from the illegals' home country. To quote Krauthammer, we cannot do that as a country, open our borders up, because of the miserable conditions in certain countries. Otherwise, the Congo would empty and end up here. Krauthammer is right. We cannot pretend to be a refuge for every country with miserable conditions without eventually experiencing those miserable conditions right here in the United States. Dictators, despots, and kings rule many countries in the world and grow richer as the people grow poorer. Valuable natural resources are squandered or left undeveloped. My friends George and Ann Beasley own a beautiful home in Tryall, Jamaica. It's a gated community outside of Montego Bay overlooking the Caribbean. And they've invited us there, Ann and myself, at least once a year for some 30 years. It's a beautiful island where farmers can grow almost anything. But the island's people have no real middle class. It's either wealthy or poverty. And the 10 shacks of the poor dot the landscape. The point is, these people have natural resources, and there is no need for them to have to wallow in extreme poverty. That's true of most of the countries considered poor in our world. Decades ago, I remember an African ruler spent $25 million on his wedding, while the average family there tried to exist on less than $400 a year. To suggest that the United States or any other democratic country should have to subject their own people to a lower standard of living so that these illegal immigrants and refugees can have a better life is ludicrous. Yet these countries continue to watch their problems cross over our border with no remorse. As if the illegal immigrant and refugee problem was not enough, we see these people entering America, especially Muslims, and beginning to demand that we change our country to their specifications. They tell us what they find offensive and demand change. Muslims call for Sharia law in our own country, a country they came to on their own. We did not ask them to come here. We do not owe them anything, and we cannot allow them to dominate us. Islam calls for death to all who will not worship Allah. In our own country, founded on Judean Christian principles, and liberals bow and scrape. Their Bible, the Quran, calls for all infidels to be unarmed. We cannot possess weapons of any kind, while at the same time they are dedicated to killing us and tell us so. Liberals and Obama call for more gun control, right out of the Muslim playbook. Meanwhile, illegal immigrants from Mexico and Central America are streaming across an open southern border. Once here, they march under the Mexican flag, demand that they be taught in Spanish, while devouring the benefits they receive for breaking our laws of entry. In 1907, President Theodore Roosevelt spoke of immigrants and being an American. Roosevelt said this, "In the first place, we should insist that if the immigrant who comes here in good faith and becomes an American and assimilates themselves to us, he should be treated on an exact equality with everyone else, for it is an outrage to discriminate against any man because of creed or birthplace or origin. But this is predicated upon the person's becoming in every facet an American and nothing but an American. There can be no divided allegiance here. Any man who says he is an American but something else also is an American not at all. We have room but for one flag, the American flag. We have room but for one language here, and that is the English language. And we have room for but one sole loyalty, and that is loyalty to the American people. Roosevelt was speaking of immigrants who respected our laws and came here to become Americans, and these legal immigrants played a big part in the growth of our country. None of us should be against immigrants who come here legally, but we should also revert back to sensible times when these immigrants were screened for diseases and anarchy. The sons and daughters of legal immigrants who passed through Ellis Island have reason to be proud of their contributions to our country. America was built by immigrants, legal immigrants, not illegal aliens looking for the benefits that our gullible politicians continue to bestow upon them. Who can blame these illegals for coming here? Mexico and Central America are run by drug lords who use violence to control the country. The people live in hovels and tin shacks. I understand why they want to leave those countries, but we cannot support the entire world of immigrants without destroying ourselves. Folks, there was a time when America elected real leaders, a time before the two-party system became so corrupt and predictable. This great country was made great by the blood and sacrifices of brave Americans. Barack Obama has said that Islam had a great hand in building America, but nothing could be further from the truth. Islam and Muslims have created nothing. Name one invention made by Muslims in the last 500 years. They did not even help build their own home countries, much less the United States. They're taught to hate from the time they're born. The Middle East has been at war with one another for thousands of years. Islam seeks to outnumber and then dominate any country they set foot upon. And that's their plan here as well, and they tell us so. How successful have they been in that pursuit? Consider that we have elected twice a man with deep Muslim roots and deep socialist communist ties, a man whose claim to fame was working as a community organizer in Chicago. Do you know what a community organizer does? Much like Al Sharpton, they form groups to agitate and parade with demands which politicians pander to gain their votes. Any wonder, then, why Obama chose Al Sharpton to be his liaison in and out of the White House? Why he chose Valerie Jarrett, a dedicated Muslim from Iran, whose family has deep communist ties, to be his chief advisor? And this devious woman, alongside Michelle Obama, Valerie's best bud, have influenced a weak Obama into decisions that have come back to haunt us. Decisions like the call for regime change in Syria without the will to enforce it, and which has led to the increasing refugee crisis. Muslims and illegal aliens have a friend in Barack Obama. The Muslim Brotherhood, in particular, has seen many of its members swept into the Obama administration, many in insensitive positions, including Homeland Security. Our media, once a proud watchdog for the American people, is today a lapdog for liberal Democrats. So-called journalists, schooled by liberal college professors who harbor socialist and communist feelings, are now openly biased, clearly Democrat, and clearly liberal. Let me close a bit early today with an obituary that was printed in the London Times. It's true, and it's brilliant. It goes like this. Today we mourn the passing of a beloved old friend, Common Sense, who has been with us for many years. No one knows for sure how old Common Sense was, since birth records were long ago lost in red tape. He will be remembered as having cultivated such valuable lessons as knowing when to come in out of the rain and why the early bird gets the worm. Common Sense lived by simple things, sound policies. Don't spend more than you can earn, and the fact that adults, not children, should be in charge. His health began to deteriorate rapidly when well-intentioned but overbearing regulations were set in place. Reports of a 6-year-old boy charged with sexual harassment for kissing a classmate. Teens suspended from school for using mouthwash after lunch. And a teacher fired for reprimanding an unruly student only worsened Common Sense's condition. Common Sense lost ground when the parents attacked teachers for doing their jobs that they themselves have failed to do in disciplining their unruly children. It declined even further when schools were required to get parental consent to administer sun lotion or an aspirin to a student, but could not inform parents when a student became pregnant and wanted to have an abortion. Common Sense lost the will to live as the churches became businesses and criminals received better treatment than their victims. Common Sense took a beating when you couldn't defend yourself from a burglar in your own home and the burglar could sue you for assault. And Common Sense finally gave up the will to live after a woman failed to realize that a steaming cup of hot coffee was hot. Spilling some on her lap, she was promptly awarded a huge settlement. Common Sense was preceded in death by his parents, truth, and trust, by his wife, discretion, by his daughter, responsibility, and by his son, reason. He is survived by 5 stepbrothers that we live with today. I know my rights. I want it now. Somebody else is to blame. I'm a victim. Pay me for doing nothing. Not many attended the funeral of Common Sense because so few realized he was gone. Carl?